Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast with me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
Getting called out in the middle of the night to go carve a cow, to do a cesarean.
It's the closest thing to farming you can do in the middle of Bristol.
And then mum put on YouTube and then now it's there for the world to see, so it's great.
England were very chirpy.
And I think I only cried like 4 times, but they just happened to get all 4 times on camera, okay?
Locked myself in a procedure room.
Whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
I love people and I love cricket.
Suddenly I'm out on a helicopter because I can go on a glacier.
It's been the longest year ever, hasn't it?
My dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
So I learned the anthem because I really genuinely thought they would make us sing it.
Polly, are you a fan of drafts or not a fan of drafts?
It really depends on the draft. I've watched 3 drafts this week. Liked 2 of them, didn't like the other. Take your pick. Yeah, the 100 draft, chaotic as usual. Doesn't make a great viewing, but at least we've got teams now.
This is true. And a bit of a shake-up in some of the teams and much of a muchness in other of the teams.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a weird one. I think we have to start with Birmingham Phoenix because what on earth is happening? I mean, you can tell me live from the scene, what is happening in Birmingham?
Well, let's start with Birmingham Phoenix, of course, came bottom, got the wooden spoon last year, which means that they get first pick. So I remember sat at their final group game in which they were just absolutely awful, embarrassingly bad, saying, aha, I see what they're doing. They really want first pick next year. Because first pick means that essentially you can choose anyone from the best players in the world to come and play for your franchise. So Welsh Fire last year did this really successfully, didn't they? Got Shabnam Ismail to come in to spearhead their bowling, made a real difference for them as a team. So it was a great opportunity for Birmingham Phoenix to do this. And so they did it. And think about who they could pick. They could pick Ash Gardner. They could pick Annabelle Sutherland. They could pick Smriti Mandela. They could pick whoever they wanted. And they picked Amy Jones. Now, Amy Jones is a fine servant of the English game, but in no one's book is she one of the greatest players on the planet.
It was a very strange decision, particularly given that Amy Jones played for the Phoenix last year. It felt a little bit strange. She wasn't retained. And then why do you pick her as your top pick? When, you know, she is one of the best wicketkeepers in the world. She probably is the best wicketkeeper. But if you're thinking about franchise cricket and, you know, they had one overseas spot left, that's the time to use your 50,000. That's your time to pull out all the stops and get a really, really good player. And then they went with Amy Jones, which, so initially I thought, okay, fair enough, but it's a little bit weird. Things went from weird to weirder. As they then retained another of their players, Kate Levick, who we love Kate Levick, we'll put that out there, big fans. They retained her, and obviously she was part of the team that came last season. So again, you thought, why aren't they mixing things up? Surely they have to change something if they want to improve, but okay, fair enough, we'll see how it goes. But then they signed their final overseas as Risha Ghosh, who is a wicketkeeper batter. Bear in mind, they've just signed Amy Jones. So get Risha Ghosh for £40,000. Use their final overseas slot on a player whose skills they've already got in the side and have paid £50,000 for. Bit strange. Then they sign Saren Smale, Thunder and England under-19 wicketkeeper batter. And then get Scotland's Elsa Lister, who is another wicketkeeper batter. Why do you need so many wicketkeeper batters? I understand having backup and I understand some can play just as a batter, but I really don't understand the logic behind that.
I think what you can do is Amy Jones will keep wicket and then you can have one at first slip, one at leg slip and one at backstop for the ramp shot.
Yes, that genius. Stop Kate Cross's ramp shot. That's all you need.
I suspect something went wrong somewhere along the way, and it wasn't their intention because they don't really have opening batters. So I'm presuming Sophie Devine and Elise Perry are going to open the batting for them, but they're just full of middle order batters.
I mean,
and then their bowling doesn't look great either. So it's kind of, they are heading for the wooden spoon again.
Yeah, I mean, Saren Smell could open the batting because I know she's done that for Thunder. But when she's done it for Thunder, it's been because someone else isn't there, if that makes sense. So she's not that first choice. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how her development's been. I mean, I know she's playing for England A. I think opening the batting is a very big responsibility. And to put that all on a player you're signing for 14,000 is quite surprising. Like, surely your openers should be some of your highest paid players, in my opinion. And as you mentioned, they're bowling. So they've kept Izzy Wong, Emily Arlott. So you've got the seam attack. They've got Caris Paveley, who can bowl a few overs. Hannah Baker and Katie Levitt for leg spin. And then Sophie Devine, Elise Perry potentially as well, bowl a couple of overs each. But it doesn't feel like they have the strength that they really need. And they don't look like a team that are going to massively improve from last season.
Yes, yes. And you look at who's left them. Now, Eve Jones played for them last year, didn't she?
Yeah.
Now, she's gone to Manchester Originals and got a 30 grand contract at Manchester Originals. So she seems to me one of the winners in this, that she's gone to a new club. She's, I think, getting more money than she got last year. And has left the club that came last. But again, you look at who they brought in and actually have they got in someone who's miles better than Eve Jones? And I don't think they have.
No, I guess Risha Ghosh, but with the bat. But again, she's a wicketkeeper. Like, surely she wants to keep in these. Like, she kept for London Spirit last season. She's not going to get a keeping gig, I don't think, at Birmingham Phoenix, unless an injury happens. On the topic of Eve Jones, so I think Lloyd Tennant is the head coach of the Originals. Obviously, mm-hmm. works at Sparks, so there's a natural connection. So you can see where she's been signed from. But Originals are looking really good as well. So they got Beth Mooney for the 50,000 slot. They also brought in Sophie Molyneux, Australian, for 40,000. They brought in Lauren Filer, which I think is a decent move. I know T20 isn't her. Well, T20, her, the 100, isn't her strongest format. She's better at tests and ODIs, but again, decent signing. And then Phoebe Graham, who, of course, plays a cricket at Thunder, so it's based at Old Trafford anyway. So the Originals are looking decent. On to London Spirit, who, I guess the big news from them is that they've got Meg Lanning for 50,000 in that top spot.
And, you know, she was top run scorer in the WPL, of course, again.
Yep.
And, of course, now she's not playing international cricket. It feels like you're getting this very fresh player coming in to play for you. So what a great signing she is.
Yeah, really, really good. And Eva Gray's also gone there, Cordelia Griffith. Hannah Jones as well of Thunder.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
I really like to see that. Neve Holland as well. Just trying to remember the players that weren't already retained. On to the Superchargers, they've stayed pretty similar. So Annabelle Sutherland has got that 50,000 spot, and of course we've seen what Annabelle Sutherland can do. They've also retained Grace Ballinger in the draft, Lucy Hyam, Ella Claridge, and they've also got Davina Perrin in their 8,000 spot. So
she's played in the 100 the last two seasons for Birmingham and has not got a game ever. So we've seen her carry so many drinks in the 100 over the last 2 years. So surely she's going to get a gig this time.
You would really hope so. And I guess she's 2 years older, has been two more years of professional cricket. So fingers crossed, we'll see her out in the middle. Now, this is the one I'm really excited about with the Oval Invincibles. They have got Chamari Attapattu in that 50,000 spot, which honestly, I think when that came in, that was the best moment of the draft.
Yeah, really, really chuffed. I mean, what a player who's right at the top of her game at the moment. So it's absolutely brilliant to see that. And looking forward to seeing her playing over here in the 100, considering what she achieved playing for Sri Lanka, at the end of last season as well. I think she's going to be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it only feels right that she's finally coming over to the 100. And yeah, Oval Invincibles are looking pretty stacked. They also got Amanda Jade Wellington, who has been in the 100 for all the years, I think, actually, and has been outstanding for Southern Brave and Manchester Originals. A proper wicket taker and, yeah, plays very, very well in domestic cricket in Australia and the WBBL. Hasn't got many opportunities for the national side, but is a fantastic leg spinner. They've also retained Lizzie Scott, and they've also got Georgie Boyce in there. So they are looking like a decent side. Now, Southern Brave, again, it feels very Charlotte Edwards is how I'd put it. A lot of it has been kept very similar. They managed to get Smriti Mandana again in that 50,000 spot. So they're going to have Smriti and Danny Wyatt opening the batting again. So that's very familiar. They've still got Chloe Tran. They've got Lauren Bell, Maya Bouchier. So kind of the core of it is very similar. Then they've got Naimi Dattani, all-rounder as well, who plays domestic cricket for Thunder. But I think very solid signing by Charlotte Edwards. The interesting one for me, actually, is Lauren Cheetle, who she's played for Australia. And I think she's a very, very interesting pick for the 100 and for Charlotte Edwards, because Charlotte Edwards has worked with her before. She kind of she's in a similar position, I think, to Maitland Brown in terms of her situation. So she's not this mega international star, but she's a really good player, and a lot of players won't have faced her before. So I'm excited to see what Lauren Cheetle does. And again, it's very Charlotte Edwards-esque, bringing in someone who's a little bit of an underdog and really embedding them in that team, and someone who's very good with people. So that, for me, she's a player to watch.
Yeah, I like that signing. I like it very much. So she hadn't played for Australia for over 4 years and then got picked for the test match in India. So it's clearly, she's 25 years old. So she's someone kind of at the peak of her game, really. And it'll be really interesting to see left-handed bowler, left-handed batter, what she brings into that team.
Yeah, another interesting pick who has gone for 11,000, actually. So not the bottom spot, but Tilly Courtine Coleman, who is involved with England under 19 at the moment. And I think she plays for Southeast Stars. That's off the top of my head. But I think, again, very Charlotte Edwards, bringing in a young player who she can kind of nurture and potentially want to keep at Southern Brave. Maybe even wants her to move to the Vipers, or whatever happens to the Vipers in next year. But again, interesting decision. And someone who might not play, but who will be around that squad. And Charlotte Edwards thinks, oh, she can learn from me. She can learn from these senior players. And it's a great experience for her. And
genius, passion about it. She doesn't pick for just for this season. She's thinking 2-3 years ahead all the time.
Yeah, she's always one step ahead of the game. Now, Trent Rockets have got Ash Gardiner, one of the best all-rounders in the world, in that 50,000 category. So imagine having Ash Gardiner and Nat Sivabrunt in your side. Something good is going to come from that. Now, we were saying Grace Scrivens has done very, very well in this draft. She's managed to get in the 40,000 bracket playing for the Trent Rockets. And what a signing that is.
So she's moved from London Spirit, where she couldn't get a game for most of the competition last season. And now she's 40,000 is the same as what Elise Perry's being paid at Birmingham Phoenix. So what, you know, I think whoever her agent is has done an amazing job there getting her their 40,000 slot. And this is her big season, isn't it? This is where we expect Grace Scrivens to step up and announce herself as the heir to the throne. And so it'll be really interesting to see how she responds in the 100.
Yeah, very interesting. And Trent Rockets have also got Heather Graham as an overseas player who's played in the 100 before, played for Trent Rockets before, actually. Katie George as well. They've kept Josie Groves. They've got Kira Chatley from Oval Invincibles. And they've got Cassidy McCarthy as well, who plays for the Blaze. So they're looking pretty good. I'm, again, very excited about Welsh Fire. They've brought Jess Jonathan in the 30,000 bracket. And they've also got Phoebe Franklin, Ella McCahan, and they've kept their two Welsh players, Claire Nicholas and Alex Griffiths. So,
well, we'll talk more about that later with our guest, right?
I was going to say, very topical. That's kind of the 100 draft.
That's amazing. And I've got a question for you, which I don't think you'd be able to answer off the top of your head unless you're really, well, you are brilliant, Polly, but you might not be you might need a bit of time for this question. It's like, who are the people, the professionals within the game who've missed out on a 100 contract? Because there must be quite a few people who, given that there are over 100 professional players now, and there are probably 80, 85 slots to fill from within the English game, who's missed out? Who are the people who are going to be really gutted? People who've allocated an extra, £11,000 that they expected income to get this year, which isn't going to happen. So I think we'll need to spend a little bit of time going through and working that out. But it's interesting, someone like Cassidy McCarthy getting a contract. You know, she moved to Blaze, only played a couple of games last season, but has managed to get a contract this time around. I'm sure there are people who played a lot more last season and had much more significant roles in domestic cricket last season who have missed out. So, yeah, let's have a little think.
I've got names in my head, and I'm not sure if they've been retained, because I know the ones fresh in my head that have been in the draft. So I'm thinking about Abby Freeborn, who plays for Central Sparks. Yeah. I don't know if she's been retained, because she was at Trent Rockets before, I think.
I don't see her anywhere on the list.
No. Sophie Luff, has she been retained by the Welsh Fire?
Don't see her name.
Wait, no. Sophie Luff not been picked up, surely?
So it's interesting, isn't it? That there's and we'll see this year on year, won't we? That there'll be a growing number of people earning a living in the game, but not everyone's going to get 100 contracts. And I guess as the game develops as well, maybe it will be for the regions or next year the counties to actually put some sort of alternative provision on during the 100 window for those people who aren't getting a game. So yeah. I think in the men's game, there's a one-day cup competition that goes on during the 100, which is specifically for players who haven't made the cut in the 100.
I'm really shocked about Sophie Luff, actually, and Abby Freeborn, to be fair. There are loads of players, actually, that come to mind. Nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah, I guess there'll be injuries and there'll be replacements and that kind of thing. I mean, Abby Freeborn, I'm sure if Birmingham Phoenix need a fifth wicket keeper, that she could
Wicket keeper batter. Birmingham need another one. What is the city of Birmingham going to do without a fifth? We're bankrupt. We need another one. That's the only way we can solve our problems. More wicket keeper batters, please. Keep them coming. It's actually quite laughable. Why are there four wicket keeper batters?
Hey, you'll be laughing on the other side of your face when they lift the trophy on finals day.
Because of all those stumpings. Everyone is out because of stumpings. Anyway, let's move on from the 100 and chat about another franchise competition, actually. The Scotland T10 competition.
Yes. Now, this is really interesting, isn't it? So it's mainly a men's competition. So I think there are going to be six men's teams. But they'll actually play three games in a day. So all the six teams will play in a day. But there are going to be two women's teams. Now, for the men's competition, it's squads of 15. And I think at least six of them need to be Scottish players. Now, whether that'll be the same for the women's competition, I don't know. It's all going to be based in Aberdeen in August. So I think the temperature gets up to a high of about 10 degrees in August in Aberdeen. So it'll be fine for cricket. And it's an interesting development. So it comes just as the 100 is finishing, but presumably not aimed at people who will be taking part in the 100. It's an opportunity, I suppose, to market the game within Scotland and to give opportunity for people who are just below the international team to actually get experience of playing a higher standard of cricket than they would just playing their domestic competition. So really interesting development, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, will there be opportunities for some English-based players to take part in it? So maybe you know, if I were Abby Freeborn, I would be thinking, well, maybe that's my opportunity to take part in some sort of franchise tournament this summer if I've not been picked up in the 100.
It is quite interesting. And I think my biggest actual takeaway was, why T10? And I understand you can fit more games into a day. And I say this as someone who has just spent the last 10 minutes discussing the 100, a format that is not played internationally. But I don't quite understand why you would play T10 over T20 when, if you want to qualify for a World Cup, for example, that will be T20, not T10. So I don't quite get that, but fair enough, each their own. As I say, cannot talk because the 100 exists. But it is an interesting one. And yeah, I'll keep an eye out for kind of how that format works and who gets selected and stuff. But as you say, it might be a really good opportunity for players that haven't been picked up in the 100, but also Scottish players in the domestic system. And I mean, even people like Catherine Fraser or Liv Bell, who play in England but haven't been picked up in the 100. I mean, by all means, they could be pulled in as replacements through injury. But yeah, definitely one to watch. Now, another franchise competition, we will get on to some proper cricket, as they call it. Some franchise cricket was the WPL final, which took place, and RCB won some silverware.
Yes, yes. So it was a really exciting finish. Went down to the last over. RCB, it was Elise Perry, wasn't it, who sort of managed the innings. It was quite a low total that we're chasing. But she sort of managed the run chase, and so they won it with three balls to spare. So I guess it was one of those things which was, on paper, didn't look comfortable, but actually at the time felt quite comfortable. And really well done. Now, apparently, RCB has existed as a men's team for decades and has never, ever won anything. And now the women's team have won it at the second attempt. So absolutely brilliant for them and for all their players that were involved in that. So Kate Cross was part of that team as well, though she didn't get a game. But it just looks a lot of fun, does the WPL and franchise cricket as a whole. I think it seems to me that international cricket is quite intense, and there's a lot of, you know, performance analysis and that kind of thing. Whereas franchise cricket, you just kind of get together and get on a party bus for a month and make some good mates. So it seems like there's very much that vibe around the WPL, it's a developmental thing. It's a fun thing. And people in India clearly really, really love it because the crowds have been brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's intense, but it's a different type of intensity. It's intense in the fact that you're just constantly doing stuff. Maybe you're doing an advert, then you're playing cricket or that sort of thing. But I think it is one of those things that's really cool. And this is why I do love franchise cricket, that loads of international players get to mix. And normally they don't get to mix in a friend way. It's very much in an opponent. They just see each other on the field, maybe sometimes outside of the field, but it's a lot more serious. And obviously, yes, they take franchise cricket seriously, but I think there's a bit more time for the downside of cricket, and particularly when they're in India, being able to soak up the atmosphere, appreciate the culture, and have those experiences that perhaps when they're touring as an international side, everything's a little bit more scheduled and they have to do this. I imagine when it's franchise cricket, it's a little bit more relaxed and there's a bit more time for those sort of things. And one thing I will say actually about the WPL final and kind of the aftermath of all of that, which I really liked, well, firstly, seeing Shreyanka Patil celebrate and lift the trophy. She's a lifelong RCB fan. I know she's a big fan of Virat Kohli. Got to meet him the other night, which she was very excited about. And on that, to be fair, I think the way, I know obviously it is the bare minimum, but the men being very much on board with the women winning, and they did like a guard of honour and stuff like that. I saw that, and the women walked around the stadium and did like a lap of honour. I thought touches like that are really nice. Again, bare minimum stuff, but it was very nice to see. And it's just amazing how well the WPL has done. And it was inevitable, really, in terms of the IPL is so successful. And obviously, India has a massive love for cricket. but to see the way I saw like people celebrating the street, like fireworks, that sort of thing, that's crazy that it has that much of an impact on people, this tournament that's existed for 2 years. And I understand obviously RCB has existed for a lot longer than the WPL. It might be different if it was a new franchise, but I think the way that it's just kind of blown up over there is fantastic.
Yeah, and there were some great performances. You know, we've already mentioned Meg Lanning, of course, but you know, Smriti Mandana played brilliantly. Harmanpreet Kaur had a decent tournament. Deepti Sharma had an absolutely fantastic tournament. And it's really interesting that she was not picked up by anyone in the 100. And I guess, do you think that might be to do with you know what happening, you know when?
Do you know what? Normally I would just say that for the drama, but I actually don't think it is. I think there are quite a few factors with why there were only two Indian players. I'm pretty sure it's the Asia Cup at the same time or around the similar time. So I imagine Smriti will have to leave and Risha Ghosh actually. Oh, that's why they've got so many wicket keepers, because Risha Ghosh is going to have to go and play for India. So that explains Birmingham Phoenix. Right. It all makes sense. They had this big plan and we were just clueless. Wow. So that's a factor. And then also I think the price brackets, you know, Harmanpreet Kaur is going to want that top band. Why would she settle for anything less? She's a really good player and she's getting paid way more in the WPL. So I think that plays a part. But yeah, as I say, international commitments, I think, is a big factor. Because also, I don't think teams will want to sign someone who's only going to be there for a bit, particularly if they go to the final and then their best player is gone. What do you do in that situation? So I think that kind of makes sense. And I don't think it is to do with, you know what, maybe London Spirit might not want to sign her because of that. But I think other teams, maybe I would reckon Oval would, just to, you know, but Oval are stacked anyway. England, New Zealand. Want to chat a bit about that, because England did very, very well against New Zealand and England weren't their usual side. They were a bit depleted because of the WPL.
It was a thoroughly professional performance, wasn't it? And Heather Knight was the standout batter. Lauren Bell played very well as a bowler as well. So they were just solid performances throughout the team, really. Great to see Tammy Beaumont back in the T20 side as well. So really a nice little opportunity for her there over these next few games. But yeah, I mean, it was very comfortable. It was very well done. There were no dramas. I guess, you know, this is a side that have lost to Sri Lanka, you know, within the last few months. But there was no hiccups like that. And you just think, are New Zealand really bad? Is there, you know, is there something wrong or going wrong with New Zealand at the moment? Because this is New Zealand, of course, famously defeated England in the Commonwealth Games bronze medal match. But they looked a shadow of that side, really.
I think one of the big problems for New Zealand, and Brooke Halliday spoke about this after the game, was that Amelia Kerr and Sophie Devine have been in the WPL, so they weren't back for that game. So they were missing two very, very crucial players, and I just don't think the depth was there, to be honest. I think their batting was all right, but it needed a bit more. Susie Bates, I think, put on 60-odd. They needed other players to step up and their bowling wasn't good enough. To be fair, I think England's bowling at times could have been better. I thought Charlie Dean and Sarah Glenn were really good. But in terms of wicket taking, I don't think it was an incredible performance. So I think both teams have things to work on. But yeah, there were five games in this T20 series. So there's a lot of time for things to change. And so I think the England players come back into the fold for the fourth and fifth game. But I think the New Zealand players came back yesterday and potentially are available for selection for the second game. Or it could be the third. I could be wrong, but I know they're back quite quickly. So things could very, very easily change. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, indeed. And of course, I guess, you know, England are fairly rusty, having many of them not having played for several months, whereas New Zealand, at the back end of their season, having played a whole season. So that could be a levelling factor as we go through the series as well.
Now, if we circle back to the 100, we can introduce our guest, because our guest played a big part in today's 100 draft. We chatted to Amy Rees, who is the assistant coach of the Welsh Fire. And of course, part of her role does involve getting players picked for the draft and designing that whole thing. And I think it went pretty well for the Welsh Fire.
It did. I think they had a very good draft. And clearly the strategy that she's going to talk about, although she didn't reveal too many of their secrets, it worked well for them. And they've come up with a really, really strong squad going into this tournament.
To start, what is your cricket story and how did you first get involved with cricket?
So my dad always played and I was probably about 10. I always used to go to the cricket club. I'd watch him play. I'd be messing about on the side, normally playing football. And one day they were short and they asked me, would I just go and field at a third man? And I absolutely loved it. I just, from that moment on, I was hooked. I used to want to play all the time. But obviously there was only boys cricket at the time when we're talking 30 odd years ago, which is a long time ago. So then I just carried on playing boys cricket. And then it wasn't until much later I played some women and girls cricket then. But yeah, that's how I got into it.
Oh, wow. So and so you were a player and and then you've become a coach later. Tell us a little bit about your playing career.
So I played for my local two localish clubs, Swansea Civil Service and then Morriston Cricket Club, in a men's team. And then I was around 15 when I played for the West of England women's team, and that had players in it such as Catherine Wilkins, Catherine Winks, Hannah Lloyd, Jackie Hawker, those sorts of players who went on to play for England, Laura Harper. Players like that. And then I played a bit for Somerset. And then in 2002, the first Wales women's game took place. And that was against Scotland. So we played in a place called Ynys Angharad Park, which is in Pontypridd. And that was 21 years ago. And that was my first Welsh game. And then I played for a long time after that. But yeah, really proud then to captain Wales for a long time. And then alongside that, my coaching was sort of developing in the background. And now that's my main focus, really.
It's strange looking back on women's cricket in that era because it seems prehistoric now, thinking about what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I turned up to play my first women's game and I was handed a skirt and long socks and I was absolutely horrified. Like, there was no way I wanted to wear that to play cricket. I'd always played in trousers in a boys' team. And to think now that in the last 4 or 5 years, there's full professional structure for women to play cricket. I probably never thought I'd see that in my lifetime in terms of coaching. If you'd have asked me then, I wouldn't have thought that would be a possibility. So that's really a positive thing.
Before we move on, Polly's got another question she's going to do, but I want to just get something really straight in my head because and I think this will help a lot of our listeners, but actually it'll help me as well, because in terms of Welsh cricket, you've got lots and lots of different things there, and I just want to kind of get in my head what fits where. So when someone plays for England, they're actually not playing for England, are they? They're playing for England and Wales.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But then there's also Wales, which exists as an entity. And there's also Glamorgan, which exists as an entity, which is bidding to become one of the tier one counties. And then there's also Welsh Fire as an entity. And there's also Western Storm as an entity. And they all kind of somehow incorporate Wales. Can you untangle that for us a little bit and explain some of the differences between those different things?
So if I tell you about the whole structure from a young girl's point of view, so they might start playing cricket at All Stars, Dynamos, then go into their clubs and play cricket at school, possibly. They then can be put forward for the Cricket Wales regional pathway. So that structure is set up as in Cricket Wales North, South, East and West. So they play internal fixtures against each other. We then have the Wales teams, which are the county age group teams, which sit on top of that. So the best players from that regional programme will go into the Wales squads and compete in the county age group competitions, just like Somerset, Devon, Cornwall, Worcester, Warwickshire. Then we obviously have a Wales senior women's team, which is the same process as in that represents the sort of county cricket. The best players from those Wales teams go into the Western Storm or regional pathway. So we have some players in the Western Storm EPP Academy first team, but we also have a player in the Central Sparks Academy. So they can go on to those different academies, basically where they live, so or where they go to university. And then, so the players can play for Western Storm, which sits on top of the Wales programme. And then obviously the 100, which is Welsh Fire, which is his own entity, sits on top of Western Storm. So that is roughly how it works. So there are Cricket Wales looks after the recreational game to a large extent, so club cricket, national programmes. They also have a national counties team, a men's national counties team. But Glamorgan look after the running of all the Welsh teams. So the Wales under 13 girls, under 13 boys, 15s, 18s, and the Wales senior women. So because they want to, they look after the more performance side of cricket and they wanted to have a bigger impact in particular on the boys game at a younger age because they're trying to produce players to play for Glamorgan. But both boys and girls got moved across at the same time. So the first class county runs that, those representative sides. So my role in Glamorgan as head of women and girls cricket, I look after all the Wales teams, but also part of my role is to look after the Cricket Wales regional pathway, south, north, east, west for the girls. So it's a little bit complicated, but it does work.
Yeah, I was going to say there's so many kind of different parts to it. Yeah. But yeah, I guess it kind of clears it up and it makes a lot of sense because I know obviously county cricket is very different for women compared to men. But when you see Warwickshire women playing against Wales women, yeah, Wales is kind of treated almost as a county for the women's side. So yeah, it's all a little bit different. But you mentioned about your role and stuff, and how did that all come about with coaching and working within Welsh cricket?
So when I started playing for Wales 21 years ago, there was no age group teams. Underneath that, there was just literally a Wales women's team that started. And then eventually there was under 13s, 15s, 18s teams that got established, where it was under 17s, I think, at that time. And they were looking for a coach for the under 17 girls team. So I sort of applied or was asked to be the coach of the under 17 team along with someone called Ian Williams, who was then the manager. And I was in that role then for 20 years, basically on a part-time basis. And then different things happened. I would end up coaching a lot, doing more and more. And it was only 18 months ago that I became full-time working in cricket. So basically I'd been a civil servant for 20 years working in IT and then coaching and things on the side then, like in my spare time, because it was something I really enjoyed. That's how my story happened. And I suppose since I've been working full time in cricket, I've had more time to coach and do things. So I do little bits for Western Storm with their academy and EPP group and occasionally with the senior team. And then obviously the Welsh Fire on top of that as well then.
That's amazing. And your work has been recognised, hasn't it? Because you won an amazing award. Now let's get this right. Grassroots Sportswoman of the Year.
That's right. Yeah, the Sunday Times Award. Yeah, that was a bit of a shock.
So how did that all come about?
So in the Wales pathway, we have lots of really good coaches, and one of those coaches is Steve James, who used to play for Glamorgan. Yes. In England. Yeah, so he nominated me for this award, and I thought it was a bit of a wind up first of all, but I didn't realize that it was going to be a public vote, that it was all going to be like publicized. So yeah, and I went to the awards evening and I didn't know before I went, and then they said I'd won the award. I couldn't actually quite believe it. But yeah, there was a lot of really cool people there at the event. But it's really nice to get recognised. But like, it's not the reason why I spend all my time doing coaching and looking after these programmes, because the main passion is to give girls the opportunity that I never had to play with other girls. I think that's something I feel really strongly about.
Yes, I mean, it's lovely to have that recognition, isn't it? But then you're back to the grind straight away afterwards, just doing what you do, because that's what gives it purpose and so on. But it's absolutely brilliant, because of course that's not just a cricket award, is it? I think I'm right in saying that's for all sports across the board.
Yeah, there was people from football, canoeing, loads of different people nominated. Yeah, so it was a big thing, really. But I probably just felt a bit, not uncomfortable, but a bit embarrassed. Like, I don't really like being the centre of attention like that. So, it was a bit of a shock. But yeah, there were some articles, I think, on the ECB website where they were asking people to vote as well. So I think there was lots of voting through that, I think, as well.
Well, yeah, that's very, very cool. And we'll speak now about Welsh Fire and the 100. So how did you first get involved with Welsh Fire? And obviously we know they didn't have the greatest first season, but actually they've gone on to become a really good team. And we all know they should have got to the final last year.
Yeah. So the first year of the 100, there was just a job advert that went out for an assistant coach, and I applied for that job. And then I had to call off Mark Wallace to say that I'd been unsuccessful in the assistant coach role, but they were looking for an analyst. And would I be interested, because I had a bit of a background in IT, would I be interested? And I was a bit like, yeah, I just want to be involved. So the first year I was the analyst. It's a bit tricky. I really liked all the stuff, like leading up to the games and after the games, but the coding was hard. Like, there's a lot of buttons to click and I would make a lot of mistakes. But in that first year, I really enjoyed it, even though it was the COVID year where we were in a bit of a bubble. I absolutely loved it. And then the next summer, when it was coming around the next time, I think there'd been a bit of feedback, and Mark Wallace actually offered me the job of being assistant coach for that year. So that was really good. And Gareth Breeze came in, and we looked to build on the stuff that sort of started, but we really needed that draft to help us, I think, because look, the first year we were supposed to have Meg Lannan and Beth Mooney as our overseas players. They pulled out, and then things obviously changed and COVID, and we really wanted to try and up the skill level, and signing Tammy as well was a massive thing for us, and to have someone of her experience and caliber as captain was really good. But yeah, I was really lucky to get involved in the first year, and then I've worked hard since, and I think that has helped as well. So yeah, but one of my big things is the draft and how we go about it. So I help Breezy with that quite a lot.
So explain to me. I just don't get the draft at all. So explain to me what sort of conversations are going on right now in terms of strategy. Oh no, don't go. So you don't need to say any names.
Okay.
But what's the sort of thought process that goes on? Is it about, well, we need a left arm spinner, or we definitely need a wicket keeper, all those kind of things in terms of prioritising?
So last year when we did the draft, we obviously had first pick and we were very much in control of the draft. And I'm not sure if you saw it, but we picked some big names at the start, which we suspected people would right to match. Mm-hmm. So we forced them into using their right to matches, which meant we could sign some of the players we were interested in lower down in the draft. Well, in the middle of the draft, basically. But a lot of the conversations go around, what do we need? So this year we've retained 8 players. And obviously we have a wicket keeper and we have a opening bowler, fast bowler and Shabs. We've got opening batters in Dunks and Haley and Tammy. And so then you are looking at the other skill sets you want. So do you need spinners? Do you need people who are going to play aggressively, people who are going to Yeah, all of those things. So you're trying to make up your team. So you're putting it into like almost like, if this happens, we're going to do this. If we manage to sign this player, we're going to do this. It's a bit of a decision tree. But obviously it's a draft. Anything can happen. People can pick people and you can use your right to match, but you have to sort of be able to think on your feet, but you have to do quite a lot of planning beforehand to make sure you get all the skill sets you need, because you have to make sure you've got enough seamers, enough spinners, and then you're looking for different types of seamers, different types of spinners, different types of batters. So yeah, it is a lot of that. And then you are literally talking about individuals then. Well, we think the stats show us that this player is better than this player at this, or we have a feeling that these players can do this. But the other thing is last year we had a really good season with Welsh Fire. One of the biggest things I would talk about is the environment that was created. And that would be largely down to Breezy. And there are lots of girls who want to come back and play for Welsh Fire, I think. But he created an environment where people were happy, being given the freedom to play their best cricket, being really clear about what we were looking to do. And I think that as well as having really good players, that was a massive help in trying to achieve that. So yeah, it is. It's a lot of conversations which can become a little bit tricky. And look, there are opinions. There's all the coaches get to give their opinions. So do Tammy and Dunks in that as well. And we look to try and make sure we've done all our preparation and we're fully prepared going into the draft.
It's okay. You don't need to answer this question, but is it a consideration that you'd quite like some Welsh players within Welsh Fire as well, or to have a good contingent of Welsh players in? So I think about the Smales, for example, who are both, you know, really good, young, high profile players, but neither of whom plays for Welsh Fire, even though they're Welsh. Is that a conversation that goes on, or actually is it all about skills and that they can bring in, or can it be about team identity as well?
I think there definitely is a bit of that. Obviously, Sophia had the opportunity to go and play Oval Invincibles, not last year, the year before, because one of their players was injured and she did really well. And obviously they've retained her. So she doesn't even go back into the draft. So we can't sign her. Yes, you know, there is a bit of that Welsh identity. Look, and Alex Griffiths and Claire Nicholas played really well for us last year, being Welsh players. Yeah, there is that. We do talk about that a little bit as well, but they have, you know, we pick those girls because they're good enough to play, not because they're from Wales. They have to still be able to contribute and play. But yeah, look, it is nice to have that Welsh identity. And it was probably shown on social media, actually. Last year, Alex Griffiths did the cap presentation down at the Aegeus Bowl. And she actually started crying when she was talking about it, because for her, it's like playing for her country. It's very different as maybe someone else feels about it. So, and I know Claire feels exactly the same. She said that in numerous interviews, that she feels like she's representing her country. And that's the unique thing I think Welsh Fire has compared to the other franchises.
Yeah, that is really special. I think it was very cool when Welsh Fire was given a franchise for the 100. And I guess another big opportunity for Welsh cricket is with Project Darwin and Glamorgan bidding to be one of these tier one counties in the women's game. What impact do you think it would have if Glamorgan was successful in that? And actually, you know, for Welsh girls playing cricket, that they can play professional cricket for their county, which is Glamorgan.
So look, I think there is no greater honour than playing for your country, and to be able to say to a 12-year-old girl, there is this pathway in Wales currently that if you are good enough and work hard enough, you can be a professional cricketer and play for Glamorgan. And I think that is there. You know, that would be my main motivation, to be getting the professional team in Cardiff and saying to people, we are here to be we are serious about this. The club has invested £250,000 in the last 3 years in women's cricket alone. That's a huge amount of money when that's not something they have to do. And I think they're really serious about it. But I'd love to be able to say to that 11, 12-year-old girl, like, look, this is your opportunity here. The whole structure sits in this country for you to be a professional cricketer, but you've got to work hard enough, you've got to be good enough to do that.
Wow. So now what I've been hearing is that the process for bidding for tier one, there's going to be some interview days where you've got to do presentations and sort of Dragon's Den style to a panel of people from cricket and from other women's sports as well. So are you going to be part of that, of those people pitching to the Dragons, as it were?
I'm not really sure yet. I haven't had anything officially through, but I'll definitely be helping. If I'm not there, definitely helping to put together the presentation, hopefully. So I did some work towards the bid as well. We haven't had any confirmation yet, so not really sure yet.
Well, we don't want to be biased here, but all the best of luck for that, because it would be amazing to have tier one cricket in Wales based in Glamorgan. I think that would be absolutely really, really, really good for the game.
Well, I hope so too, because it gives obviously the link with Welsh Fire then as well, makes that even stronger to have that, all that professional cricket in Wales. Yeah, be very exciting if it could happen.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Amy. We really enjoyed talking to you. It's been really, really great insights you've given us into, I suppose, grassroots cricket, but also professional cricket in Wales.
Brilliant. No problem.
That was a very interesting chat with Amy. It was really good to hear about all the things that are going on in Welsh cricket at the moment.
Yeah, that's an area I think we've been lacking on the podcast, to kind of find out the nitty-gritty of Welsh cricket and everything that's going on. Because I think particularly with Project Darwin coming up, it's quite an interesting area of women's cricket and how Wales works with the rest of the England and Wales cricket board and how Glamorgan fits in with everything else. So it was really interesting to hear, and of course, very relevant given the 100 draft as well. And Welsh players have been picked, Alex Griffiths and Claire Nicholas, which is good to see. Have we got anything else on the agenda for today?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Have we got any more guests lined up, Polly, for the weeks ahead?
We've got a lot of guests lined up. I think we'll take a break for Easter, but we have quite a big backlog of guests. So we will be back next week with another guest. Pretty sure we've got an Irish guest next week. But in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. So our Instagram and TikTok is Naughty Child Podcast, and our Twitter is OHR Podcast.